starting this afternoon, I have parenting expert Laura Erskine on the line. How are you today, Laura?
Hello, good afternoon.
Thank you for joining me. The reason I want to chat with you this afternoon, two different things. The free school books for all primary students come September 2023. But we're hearing, you know, leaks, little leaks here and there in terms of budget 2023. There was once upon a time when you knew nothing until the day of the budget, which is tomorrow, of course. But childcare is to be reduced by 25%. Is this enough? It could save some families up to €2,000 a year.
Do you know, it really depends how this is actually rolled out, Ciara, to be honest. And I remain a sceptic because I've been commenting on the budget for the last 12 years. And childcare is one of those ones that they roll out, the week of the budget. They roll it out when they're looking for our votes and they're going into government as well. And yet we're still here 10, 12 years later, and nothing meaningful has happened in the childcare sector with respect to how it's being funded.
What would have been meaningful to you?
Childcare, but then for parents. So at the moment, what they've done is they brought in this universal childcare subsidy. So it's basically they pay the creche providers a subsidy for every hour that your child is in a registered childcare facility. And that makes sense. But when you drill down into that, the people who are eligible for the meaningful amount of the subsidy, which would be between, you know, €1 and €3 per hour, that's really lower incomes who are earning under €30,000. Anybody earning over that gets a universal subsidy, which is 50 cent per hour. So when the government come out and say that they're going to cut childcare costs by 20 to 25%, who that actually is going to affect remains to be seen, because they're saying at the moment it could reduce costs monthly for parents by between €160 and €200. But I'm wondering which cohort of parents they're referring to, because I can't see that 50 cents suddenly magically turning into €200 every month. And at the moment, myself, having had the universal childcare subsidy on a full-time basis, it amounts to €35 a month of a credit back off my childcare fees. And so that's really not meaningful in the grand scheme of things when you're looking at childcare fees of between anywhere between €800 and €1,200 a month, depending on where you're living.
If we look at this county, even though we're the third highest when it comes to house prices, we're going to go through the DAF.ie report in a while. We're also incredibly expensive when it comes to rent and a lot of other things, because we're so close to the city centre, and it's a place that a lot of people have bought houses in and are more happy to buy houses in, I guess, than less space, etc. in Dublin city centre. But I'm saying all that because childcare, and this is from me speaking with people like, you know, Early Childhood Ireland and different alliances like that, in this county is actually okay-ish money-wise. Now, I'm saying okay-ish. It's around in the 800s on average, 850 on average, 880 or 830, excuse me. It has dipped a little bit since 2014. So with that being said, there's obviously other counties where things are a lot more expensive. So it's difficult for 25%, I guess, to have the equality and the overall effect you'd want to see on every member of the public in Ireland that obviously is using childcare.
Absolutely, Ciara. And the thing is that at the moment it's being paid to the childcare providers. So you register with your PPS number and your child's PPS number on the government website, and they give you they show you what you qualify for. In my case, it was 50 cent an hour, and then that's paid directly to the childcare provider, and it comes off the fee. But what about for those people who haven't got access to a registered creche facility within their immediate community? What happens to the people who are working shift work and need to employ childcare in their home? And this, you know, in this case, then the childcare subsidy just doesn't apply because they're employing a different childcare solution to meet their needs. I've always been in favour of paying this subsidy to parents in the form of a tax credit or a voucher, but paying it directly to the childcare provider and only to those registered big creche facilities means that you're really tied to getting into one of those. And, you know, with COVID, a lot of those facilities, you know, lost a lot of staff, particularly non-national staff, a lot of staff coming from France and from Spain working in those facilities. And they went back home, and now they can't come back here again to work again in the childcare creches because they can't afford the rent. And we have that whole crisis. I know in one creche very close to me in South Dublin, they have staff couch surfing on parents' houses so they can maintain the staff ratio between staff and children, because the staff can't actually afford to rent accommodation in the area. And it's pretty shocking. So I think more needs to be done in this area, and coming out with the big headline figure of saying they're going to reduce costs by 20-25%. I think they need to break that down as to what this is actually going to mean for middle-income Ireland, because they are the big squeezed middle who aren't benefiting from the social welfare payments, from the back-to-school allowance, from a lot of the rent reliefs that are out there. And so these are the ones who are suffering most, and for which childcare is actually a second mortgage.
I want to ask you just elsewhere in terms of the budget and childcare. That is what the Irish Independent is reporting this afternoon. There's going to be a double payment of the monthly child benefit, and also a €500 one-off payment for carers and people with disabilities in tomorrow's budget. That one-off double payment of the monthly child benefit, just how far could that possibly go for people?
I think it'll make a big difference in the short term, just because we've all had a lot of expense lately, and the cost of living has increased so dramatically between the cost of groceries as well as utilities. And, you know, if you're like me, you know, I have three children, they're all in school and creche facilities, but September is an extremely expensive month. If you want your child to enjoy any of the extracurricular activities, all the term fees come hot on the heels of the back to school costs.
Yeah.
And so suddenly you've got gymnastics and ballet and horse riding and football memberships and all sorts. And so it can be as expensive a month, if not more so, than Christmas. So any help in that regard by getting that second payment would go a long way to sort of easing any debt that people might have gotten into, to be able to give their children everything that they needed in that back to school time. And unfortunately, that's the reality for a lot of parents. They do have to put things on loans, credit cards, just to be able to make ends meet.
Or unfortunately the kids being unable to do certain things like maybe their other friends are doing, which, you know, causes issues in itself, which one can imagine. If we look at single parents, though, there has been a bit of conversation online this afternoon about those who are trying to get through this cost of living crisis as a single parent. They just feel not much is being done for them at the moment. Do you see them having any ray of hope come tomorrow?
Gosh, I really hope so. I was a single parent myself for a little while.
What was the most challenging thing for you in terms of the finances? Was it, I guess, being overwhelmed at that?
Absolutely. And very often single parents don't have the support of their ex-partner, you know, and if there has been support mandated by a district court, then it's a very small amount. It honestly, that was a very overwhelming time, because suddenly you've gone from having a mortgage or a monthly rent to pay, and it's split between two parties, and having to try and make ends meet on your own. And it really is difficult. There's not enough support is given to single parents in terms of those the single tax credits, the home carer allowance, all of that, and invariably lots of women in particular who are single parents, they can't work because of the cost of childcare.
Yeah.
So we're back to that whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes unaffordable, and yet they want to work and they want to be able to provide for their children. So, you know, there definitely could be so much more done, and those community childcare facilities for people who are trying to return to work, and I know they're means tested, but there's so few and far between that are out there, and these people live in all areas of Ireland, and unfortunately the government needs to do more in putting more of those community childcare facilities in place.
Laura, quickly, I want to ask you about the free school books. That's for primary school students by next September 2023. You have three kids, obviously varying in age. Is that the best way, I guess, to use 45 million euro, which it will cost each year, to buy these books? Because I was speaking this morning with my colleagues on Kildare Today, and Cuiva was mentioning, you know, kind of the swapping of different editions of books and things like that. How beneficial is that in the long term? Obviously great that parents won't have to pay for it.
So, I mean, honestly, primary school, the cost of school books, they vary between 100 to 200 euro for a child going back to school.
And so that's nothing compared to secondary, like?
Secondary, you're looking at between 400 and 500 euro. A lot of the primary school books are actually, sorry, you might hear my Montessori age child getting a little bit upset out the back. So the primary school books, a lot of them are workbooks. So I wonder, will the government funding actually go far enough? Will it just be for the printed books, or will the workbooks be included?
Okay, listen, you need to go.
Sorry, apologies.
You are absolutely okay.
And the secondary school books are just so expensive, and nothing has been done for them. And then a lot of the secondary schools have now mandated iPads. So, you know, it's just, it's more could be done, and those mandated iPads, they don't have... They have 23% VAT and not an all percent VAT, which is school books have. So, unfortunately, that's... Just more could be done.
Yes. Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much. I know you're very busy this afternoon. Thank you so much. That's parenting expert Laura Erskine there, speaking about all things, I guess, child related to budget 2023. Childcare is to be reduced supposedly by 25% in tomorrow's budget. Free school books for all primary school students. Many people online I've seen commenting and also getting in touch with us here at the station are saying the amount it costs to send the kids to primary school is a lot less than when they go to secondary school. And I don't know about everybody, but when I was in first year, we did like 18 or 19 subjects. So maybe like two of those subjects, like tech, graph and art, you didn't need a book for. But you needed the book for all the rest. So that's a huge amount of money. And then whittling it down to like 11 subjects or 12 come your junior cert cycle, if that makes sense. So it can be very, very expensive. 0833 97 97 97 is the text line. What happens to you if you make the bills, you pay the bills, not the government responsibility? Okay. Yeah. I just think that's true, but like things weren't as expensive, fuel and energy. So I kind of don't really get that text. You may be making the bills, but things have gotten more expensive. So I think that one kind of answers itself. Now, Karen O'Loughlin is Transport, Energy, Aviation and Construction Division Organiser with SIP2. She joins me now. Good afternoon to you, Karen.
Good afternoon, Kira. How are you?
I'm grand. Thank you very much. Transport Police, you have been speaking about this in recent days. You believe that, or SIP2, I should say, is calling for a dedicated public transport police division. This is in light of a rise in antisocial behaviour. It's happening on buses and trains. And here in Kildare, we have heard from listeners saying that it's happening quite often.
Yeah, no, and I suppose I don't want to start the conversation by having people presume that public transport is inherently unsafe, because it's not.
Yeah.
But we do have a problem. Right, the rising incidence of antisocial behaviour targeted at customers and targeted at transport workers. And this is increasingly the experience of our members who work across public transport. And you've seen all the media reports, right, of recent times with people being assaulted and harassed on buses and trains, etc. So we've decided to launch this campaign. We're calling it Safe Journey, the Safe Journey campaign, to try to influence policy makers around two things, right? First is the idea of dedicated police for transport, like they have in the UK, where it works quite well. And secondly, to try to influence policy makers around decisions that they are making that is making transport less safe for passengers in general, and certainly for women or for vulnerable passengers, like when they decide to automate stations and there's no actual person at the station and you're travelling in the dark at winter time, or like if they decide that there's not going to be a guard on a train. So if you're taking a journey, an intercity journey, maybe Dublin to Cork, Dublin to Limerick at 9 o'clock in the evening in the winter time, you know, there's no other person on the train other than the driver. That makes that journey less safe for a lot of people and makes them feel less secure about taking those journeys. So that's the kind of thing that we're trying to get out there into the, I suppose, the public narrative, really.
How much would public transport police cost a country like Ireland?
I actually don't know, because the government would have to decide which policy they want to follow, whether they want to set up a dedicated standalone public transport police, which would be one cost, or whether they want to decide to take on additional Gardaí and just deploy them across the public transport network.
Okay. If we look at the report, it says that 1 in 3 women have been physically assaulted on public transport and 6 out of 10 women don't feel safe when they're on the bus. If you were to take it personally, Karen, do you feel safe after dark using public transport?
No, I would always be very, very vigilant if I have to use public transport after dark or even at particular times, you know, when there's nobody about. You'd be nervous. Like years ago when I was a teenager, and I've told this story several times, you learn very quickly. When I had a part-time job when I was 15, coming home from work in the evening time when it was dark in the winter time, never sit upstairs on the double-decker bus. And when you sit downstairs, always sit on the outside of the seat so you can't get trapped. Now, if you look at that report that you've referred to...
Sorry, this is the TFI's report they published in July 2020. It's called
In a Woman's Shoes.
Yes.
So on that report, people are still telling those same stories. Now, I'm in my 50s now, and I was doing that when I was a teenager. So this cycle is repeated, and people who were doing it when they were young are now teaching their children that this is what you should do as well. So it's, yeah, and I could definitely say that, yes, it makes me nervous when you go to an automated station. It makes me nervous if there isn't a guard on the train.
Yeah, I'm 29. I have to say I feel pretty much the same, and maybe that's a gender-based thing to an extent, but... Even men can suffer horrendous experiences when on public transport late at night. Again, we're not trying to scaremonger people. It's just what has the potential to happen. If you look at those stats, 55% of women, as I said, prefer not to use public transport after dark. Quite difficult when it's winter time because it's dark by like 4:45, 4:30. And 45% of men feel the same. So only a 10% difference there. Not much, Karen.
Well, I would think that the government and the NTA need to look at this and say, well, the vast majority of our customers are nervous about this. And when, especially in our own cities, the nighttime economy, lots of low-paid workers, lots of people depending on public transport, yet they don't feel safe. So there's something needs to happen here. That's why we want to lead out this campaign. We want to get public support because it's also about the assault and harassment of workers on public transport and the passenger experience as well. So I think we need everybody to join in this conversation to say, look, it's something different needs to happen here.
Well, I appreciate your time this afternoon. That is Karen O'Loughlin. She's Transport, Energy, Aviation and Construction Division Organiser with CIP2 on Public Transport Police. It is Monday, of course, today, and a lot of people will be celebrating birthdays, etc. And we want to wish a very, very happy 90th birthday to Eileen Kane over in Suncroft Lodge. That comes in from Michelle and Skinny Furlong. Love this song. Eileen, happy, happy birthday. 90, that's absolutely amazing. We hope you're having a fab day. Getting lots of cake. I mean, isn't that the best thing about birthdays? Cake and probably presents also. And of course, as I said, that comes in from Michelle and Skinny Furlong, who want to wish you one of the best birthdays ever. And here at KFM, we hope you do have that, Eileen. So 90. So that means you were born in 1932. Is that correct? God, you've seen so much, I'm sure. I'd love to have a chat with you, Eileen. Anyway, hope you have a very happy birthday this afternoon, or earlier this morning, I should say. Or yeah, was it this morning or yesterday? I think it was this morning. Daft.ie released the third quarter report of house prices in this country. And good news to an extent, house prices were largely stable between June and September of this year. The average house price in the whole country was €311,514. That was an increase of 0.1% on the average for the second quarter of the year. So a very small increase, but still an increase. And due to increases in recent quarters, year-on-year inflation does remain high. It's at 7.7%, but it is down from 3 months ago when the figure was 9.2%. I'm delighted to say Pat Davitt does join me now, of course, Chief Executive of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. How are you today, Pat?
Good afternoon, Ciara. I'm great. I was loving there listening to you singing. I didn't realise that you could sing like that. You have a lovely voice.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it. And if it's your birthday soon, I can, you know, be rented for hire to sing, obviously. yeah, I like to sing, Pat, you know.
Very good. Very good.
They say when you sing, you're not in danger.
Oh.
Yeah, so like if you're ever feeling anxious or worried or scared, and Cuiva says I'm always worried, which is probably true, sing, because it's something about the breath, the out-breath, whatever way you breathe, it calms a human's body. So there you go. Bit of advice for you.
I tell you, that's very good, and every day is a learning day in my school day, so I'll take that in.
Absolutely. So we need some advice from you this afternoon, and this Daft.ie report showing stabilisation in the market. This is the second, it has shown this in the 3 months of the year, the third quarter, obviously, but there's still going to be those bidders out there, and how would you advise people who are bidding on a house? Should they be ecstatic with this news or take it with a pinch of salt?
Well, I think in our own barometer report, that's the IPAB one, we saw that the market had changed from May of this year. And what I mean by changed, I mean that reserve prices, the increasing reserve prices that we have seen for the past number of years had actually stabilised, so that it was going to mean a change for the marketplace. And in our own report, the first 6 months of the year, we have 6.36 of a gain. And we're saying that for the last 6 months of the year, we're looking at somewhere between 0 and 1% or something like that. So that I think in line with what Daft are saying, yes, that's what's happening out there. For bidders at the moment, there's more property after coming on the market. And I think that's the normal scenario when interest rates start going up and people think that the market has hit the top, that they want to sell. And I think that has caused more properties to come on the market, and agents can see that right throughout the country. So for bidders, I can't see prices falling greatly, especially in lots and lots of areas. You won't see them falling greatly. In some hot areas, you may well see a change or a correction in the marketplace.
But I know here in County Kildare, obviously a very popular place to buy houses, the third highest county in the country, before it, Dublin number one and Wicklow at number two. Wicklow around 412,000 on average. This is the Daft.ie report, and Kildare over €326,000. You have noted that the European Central Bank's interest rate increases. That will also be limiting the people who can draw down new mortgages.
Yeah, and if you look at those prices, Wicklow is the second, and the reason it is because Greystones is in there, and prices around Greystones around that area are quite large, and hence they bring up Wicklow, because Wicklow normally, there's many parts of Wicklow that you can buy properties in a lot cheaper than actual what the price for Wicklow is. But however, yes, we've noted that the interest rates are obviously gone up by 1.25% at the moment. Some people haven't actually seen those interest rates yet because they're not on all mortgages. People taking a mortgage for the first time will see them, yes. And that means that for most people, they won't be able to pay as much for a property as probably they thought they could, because they're paying more in interest, and looks like they're going to pay another 0.75% before the end of the year. So I think when interest rates go up, it automatically means that it takes a certain amount of buyers out of the marketplace. And that, I suppose, for some purchasers is very, very good. For the person who wants to buy that particular property, it's not that good news, but it certainly is for some other people. So for bidders in general, I would say to them, right now, I think the market is changing. It's changing from the high prices that we have seen to more normalised market. And I would say to people, don't be fooled by the fact that you hear that the prices have come back to where they were in 2007. Some prices have, and some prices have passed it. But for many counties, prices haven't passed it or got anywhere near the prices of 2000, of the late 2006 and 2007, where the index has come back, but the actual prices haven't. But in general, for people buying a property, I'd say that there's going to be a term of stabilisation now from here and probably into the new year as well. So I don't think there's a big rush probably for people who are, if you can't get property A, well, then you may well get property B. So I think that from that point of view, it's good news.
Okay. We appreciate you taking the time. Of course, that is Chief Executive of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. That's Pat Davitt there. And thank you, Pat, for taking my call this afternoon. Moving to another sector, we have General Manager of Kilkee Castle over in Castledermot in Athy there, or I should just say Castledermot, and Member of the Irish Hotel Federation, Aidan O'Sullivan, on the line. Aidan, we appreciate you chatting to us this afternoon. The reason you're on is some members of the Irish Hotel Federation are reporting that their electricity bills have increased by as much as 400%. For you guys over in Kilkee Castle, how much has the energy increases affected you?
Hi, Ciara. Thanks for your time. Yeah, the numbers are correct there in terms of what's been going on in really recent times. It's just been unprecedented energy price increases for ourselves in Kilkee in particular. Look at even our standing charges have actually just doubled in both gas and electricity. But we have hoteliers.
Can I just ask you there, because we've spoken about standing charges on the show in the past few days. What is the reason given to you by your energy providers why they have increased?
I suppose we haven't been getting enough there. The simple answer is that their costs on their hand of producing it and supplying it.
This was the problem with standing charges. It's not actually anything based per unit. It's just them actually giving the electricity. And some of the providers, when this was broken by Charlie Weston, obviously a reporter with the Irish Independent, about the standing charges increasing, that they were noting that they didn't want customers' bills to be as big, so they increased it, the standing charges side of things. So it doesn't really seem to make any sense, even for yourselves in the professional sector, if you get me.
Yeah, well, look, it's like yourselves there, it's hard to fathom it. It's definitely an area that we've worked hard on since being allowed reopen this year and get the hotel here in Kilkee back motoring, and to be faced with charges like that, it's a sore one. It's definitely difficult. We've had a great summer, and we're like a lot of other hoteliers that have had a really, you know, a great time getting people back into our business, both internationally but locally as well. But we're faced with, God, it's unprecedented in my time in terms of the dramatic 300 and 400% increases in energy alone. But there's other business costs as well that are skyrocketing, so not just alone in the utility side. Our linen in Kilkee is 38% up on direct costs, and not even consumption, but just line item. Across the boat, if we talk to other hoteliers, and we're looking at food is up 22%, linen in general 29%, and beverages even up 12% in the past 12 months. So across the board, the costs are just they're skyrocketing.
So when you're talking about the linen, does that include bedding?
Yes, correct.
Are there any changes there? Have hotels changed in any way, would say, in terms of becoming more environmentally friendly? And also, obviously, once one person stays in the room, it needs to be changed for the next person. But if someone's staying there for 3 days, are their linens changed on their bed every single day?
Well, like that, it's a really good example. So we've implemented a lot in the solar park.
Aidan, wherever you've moved to there, you've just completely dropped out. I don't know what is with us lately on the show. So many people are dropping out on us. Aidan, if you want to just have a quick spin around there and just make sure you can get into a better coverage area. And just to let people know, I will be bringing budget giveaways that the Irish Examiner is commenting or reporting on this afternoon. What's in it for you for tomorrow? I have a breakdown of things like cost of living, families, childcare, business, transport tax, social welfare, housing, and other things like policing of the country. So I will bring that to you after the break. But Aidan, are you still there for us?
Hopefully, hear me now.
Sorry, so you're mentioning about the bed linen.
Yeah, certainly in terms of sustainability, it's a huge one. It's one that, you know, across the board from Hotel Federation conferences, there's been an emphasis on we need to do a lot more, but there's been huge efforts there. Ourselves in Kilkee, we've put a lot of solar panels into place. We've monitoring systems throughout all of our utilities. But I guess, look, now with all of those in play, the costs are still outdoing all of that. But in the linen sector, we've looked at items throughout COVID and where we would have normally just...
Unfortunately, Aidan, your line is just failing on us there this afternoon. We do appreciate you coming on and talking to us, obviously. In general, Aidan was on to speak about the increases some hoteliers are seeing. 400% for electricity when it comes to their gas, or they're seeing 300% increases. They've also said, the hoteliers, this is in terms of replying to the Irish Hotel Federation, that they believe now is not the time to increase the 9% hospitality VAT rate, saying it would only add to inflationary pressures in the system. The organisation is asking for measures to mitigate the impact of the energy price increases, and some hoteliers have raised their concerns about, will they be able to accommodate everybody? Like, will their hotel rooms potentially be able to be sold out for the winter? Will they have enough money to pay for, you know, 250 rooms out of their 250 rooms? Will they only be able to open 125 due to the cost? That's things that still need to be answered and still need to be understood, of course. But that is Aidan O'Sullivan. He's the general manager of Kilkee Castle over in Castledermot, the hotel, and of course a member of the Irish Hotel Federation. And after the break, I'll go through the budget expectations. The Irish Examiner have a little breakdown here. I'll go through that for tomorrow. And just before I go, 083 97 97 97, Lisa Marr has texted in to say hi. Hello to you, Lisa. Hope you're having a good day. Elaine Loughlin and Daniel McConnell are writing in the Irish Examiner today, keeping people up to date with the budget giveaways, as they noted, as what's in it for you tomorrow, Tuesday. So the €600 energy rebate, it's to be paid in three instalments, so €200 this year, and next it's to help the household with rising electricity and gas costs, of course. Then the double payment of child benefit before Christmas, which will cost the state about €180 million. I was chatting to Laura Erskine at the beginning of the show about that, of course. Then the one-off cost of living payment in October or early November, that's for people who are on social welfare supports, similar to the annual Christmas bonus, but that will cost the state around €300 million. If we look at families, of course, I mentioned the childcare scheme aiming to halve the creche fees over the next two budgets. They're aiming to do 25% this year, starting with a €200 reduction in this year's budget. The rollout then of the free school books, that's to primary school level students though. Then a reduction in the pupil teacher ratio. At the moment it's 24 to 1. It'll be 23 to 1, they are reporting, for budget 2023, and the ratio then will even be lower again in DESH schools. Then a package worth tens of millions of euro for the school bus transport, allowing the Department of Education to prioritise late eligible children and those on concession tickets. €500 reduction in third level fees, that would be quite a chunk in fairness. If you look at business, an energy scheme aimed at the small and medium enterprises, helping again with the cost of electricity or energy, I should say. Low interest loans then to help the businesses develop and grow, and then increased grants for businesses that take people off the live register, as well as increased funding for training schemes. If we look at transport now, a retention of the 20% reduction in public transport fares into next year, €1 million per day in funding to develop greenways and other cycling amenities, which will amount to about €364 million over the entire year. Duh, says you. There's 364 or 365 days in the year. Then €10 million out of the cost of living package will go towards providing fuel subsidies. That's for the school transport. Tax-wise, an increase in the entry threshold to the highest rate of income tax. It's to increase to around €40,000. That's when people will begin paying 40%. Then the introduction of 0% tax on newspapers. That's as part of a wider media package. That will include a €6 million fund to prioritise local democracy and court reporting. I need to find out a bit more about that. What do they mean by local democracy? No change to the USC, they're noting, except to allow for an increase in the minimum wage. Social welfare then, across the board, increases in all payments of at least €10 per week. An expansion of the fuel allowance scheme to ensure more pensioners qualify. A widening of the eligibility criteria, that's for the working family payment, to those on lower incomes. It will help them, they're noting here, either stay in employment or take up jobs. Housing, the Help to Buy scheme, many people will know that. It's been retained for another year, and renters are to receive a tax credit. Of course, I don't have the details as of yet. We'll have these all tomorrow. And then they kind of have an area called Other here. There's going to be an additional 800 Gardaí, they're reporting here. We know in County Kildare, we have very low Garda numbers compared to our population. And then the abolition of hospital charges. We heard about this last week. However, that is not likely to come into force until later in 2023, due to pressure on the health budget. This morning, John Downing was speaking to Owen on Kildare Today. And in terms of the health budget, you know, he was saying, I take that with a pinch of salt, basically. And what time of the year in 2023 will those hospital charges be abolished? We don't know as of yet. But will any of these things happen tomorrow? Of course, we have to wait and see. The 27th of September, it's been discussed for so long. Obviously, move forward, usually kind of the second week in October. We're going to hear about Budget 2023 in less than 24 hours. CSO figures released have revealed that the number of incidents of rape reported to Gardaí in the past 12 months, that's from June 2021 to June 2022, did increase nearly by one quarter, by 24%. Nolene Blackwell, of course, is the chief executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. She is on the line. Hello, Nolene.
Hello, Ciara.
Unfortunate news to speak with you about this afternoon. Some people may say, well, this is potentially a positive because more people are reporting it, but still a 25%, well, 24% increase is huge.
Yeah, but the numbers are still tiny, Ciara. We know, to the best of our knowledge, we know that a very significant proportion of people listening to the radio, to you today, on this island, in this country, are affected by sexual abuse, including rape. We know that for a fact. And still the numbers that report are really very small. So we see this year, nearly 3,500 offences reported for the past year. It's a bit up on last year by about 200, a little under 200. But that's offences. It's not even people. It's not even 3,500 people reporting. Somebody might be reporting 10, 20 instances, 100 instances. And to put that in context, we run the National 24-Hour Helpline, as you know, and mm-hmm. I just remind, and you often do as well, remind the number is 1-800-77-88-88 if anyone wants any help or support. But we get twice that number contacting us, disclosing an instance for the first time ever, every single year. So that's just people contacting.
Tell me that figure again. How many?
But say we get about 7,000 new people who haven't disclosed it before contacting our helpline looking for support. And that's each year. So like there's more people contact us. Some people contact us on a regular basis or near regular basis. But that's new people.
Nolene, so do you think that 24% increase has something to do with the fact people are feeling more confident to come forward?
Maybe. It might be that. We think it's probably a combination of things. We think people are recognising more when they are raped, and that rape is a crime, and that they are entitled to report it and to seek a just outcome. It's probably partly that, but we don't know for sure, because the last good evidence we have on a countrywide basis is about 20 years old. So it's hard to know, are the number of rapes going up or the number of reports going up? We think it's a combination of both. Certainly, our folk who accompany people to Garda stations and to court say that they are seeing an increase in people's confidence in reporting. So instead of just saying, there's nothing I can do about this, people are recognising, I have been raped, this is a criminal offence, I can report it to the Gardaí and I should be able to get a just outcome out of it.
And I think that's key. People are feeling more that they may get a just outcome, whereas before they may have felt the complete opposite way. And it has been noted by yourselves, as many people will already know, the sexual assault offences, they do remain one of the most underreported crimes to Gardaí.
Exactly. So, and that'll probably always be the case, because, you know, for the most part, people know the person who commits the offence against them. They may, for a whole lot of reasons, delay reporting. It may take them ages to come to terms with it themselves. So there's a whole lot of reasons why it will always be it won't be the same thing as reporting that your bike was stolen. And I don't mean to trivialise it, but it is a very different experience going telling someone you were raped and having that investigated in detail. So it will always be harder to report that than some other crime. But there is, each year we are seeing an increase in the numbers going forward. It may be that actually sexual offences are increasing. It may just be that people are more aware that these are criminal offences and that this is something that they can and should report. And maybe, too, they're getting more support. Now, the Gardaí often come in and get a lot of criticism, including from me, about lack of resources, about lack of care in dealing with victims of sexual violence. But
let me ask you about that, because I have a certain amount of time here, Nolene. I was reading through potentials for Budget 2023. What you know, media are reporting that is probably very likely we'll see tomorrow. They're saying an additional 800 Gardaí. Is that really enough? And I'm asking a leading question by saying really.
Yeah. So of course it isn't. But if we got 80 of that 800 who were properly trained, it would. And training in this area is different to training for investigating other types of crime. Some of those resources have to go into training more of the guards so that they can do those investigations in a competent and sensitive way.
Nolene, again, I just have a very limited bit of time here, but I want to get one text into you on 0833 97 97 97. Mags has said, increase the jail sentence for rape, and she believes things will calm down a lot. What would you say to somebody who'd have that view?
So, in fact, it's part of the answer, all right, is making sure that someone who rapes somebody believes that there are consequences to raping them and that they could end up with a significant sentence. Rape sentences are increasing quite slowly. Minister for Justice has indicated she's going to introduce new legislation to allow for an increase in sentences. But the first thing I would say is that more people have to be investigated and brought to trial before we get to a stage where people really realise this is criminal behaviour, is wrong, and that you could end up with a penal sanction against you, including jail.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Nolene. You always have great time for us here. Chief Executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre there, going over those CSO figures revealing the number of incidents of rape reported to Gardaí between June 2021 and June 2022 did increase by 24%. As Nolene pointed out, their helpline at the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre on average is seeing around 7,000 people reporting new cases being reported annually. And that line for anybody who is affected by this or wants to get in touch is 1800 77 88 88. 1800 77 88 88. My thanks to Nolene Blackwell there. And of course to you for listening. I'll speak with you again tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.